In 1985, which is a kind of goal we put for ourselves, this is classified a different way, so excuse my using the word carcass, I couldn't get around it any other way, but these are actual animals that are going to be consumed. This is what the demand would be. And this is using the Census Bureau's idea of population. It may go up a lot faster than they think it's going to go. This is in pounds, because again, it doesn't come in carcasses. This is the value on the farm, not in the store. This is a value on the farm of all these things. And for Mrs. Bullock's sake, I would say that there's no reason why that can't be an odd lot bigger, but we don't have any way to tell what could be done with it. Go ahead. Not only that, in order to produce that meat, we've got to have $9 million worth of harvested forage and $5.5 million worth of barley and oats, and we have to have range for 182,000 animal units. That means a cow and a calf, or the equivalent. Now, I'll tell you right now that I'm not going to tell you what our productive capacity is, because every one of these things can be met easily with the land that we have, and if we have the resources to put into it, there's no doubt about it. We can produce this and more. Alaska does not have a tremendous amount of land suitable for farming, but it's got plenty. Meet all of these things. On milk, this is in millions of pounds. You're not used to it, 2 pounds is a quart. This is millions of pounds of milk consumed now, imported, and actually produced in Alaska. This is what could be consumed in 1985. This allows for the fact that people drink less milk all the time, but there, of course, are more people. I mean, the milk business is going downhill, I'm sorry to say. In the country, but we think that within our lifetime, people are still going to drink milk. I hope so, anyway. Next. To do this, by 1985, we're going to need almost 11,000 cows. And they will be in herds of 80 cows. And this is, they make 137 herds. This is twice the size of a present herd, approximately, the average herd at present. The value of the production will be up in here somewhere. It's interesting that one cow produces about $1,000 worth of income a year, and we have had cows in Alaska which produced $1,500 net profit a year. It costs about $500 to feed a cow, and its cows sometimes produce over 20,000 pounds of milk in a year. Yes. Vegetables. Unfortunately, my charts are not all comparable. This is present. I don't have a projection for the future, but you can see there's a tremendous deficit right now. This is the demand, and this, if we produced it all, this is what it would be worth at present. Yes? Now, what is this, Don? Fruit. All right, this is fruit. Small fruit is practically zero in the States now, but people are buying these things at high prices in stores, and we think that by 1985, they will be buying $600,000 worth of strawberries, $100,000 worth of raspberries. This isn't too much when you divide by the number of people in the state and consider the consumption in the United States. Cranberries, other types of fruit, and of course the home gardener has plants which have to be bought. Something over $1 million. Now, here is the first thing that we might be able to export. Strawberry plants only live for about a year and a third, and they have to be, on the average, and they have to be replaced. Hundreds and hundreds of acres, thousands of acres of strawberries are plowed up every year and replaced. The man that raises the strawberries does not raise his replacement plants. He buys them somewhere else. Alaska has great advantages in this. We lack a lot of the insects they have down there. We lack a lot of diseases they have. We can raise things much more easily, which are disease-free. You can ship them with practically no soil attached to them, and there's a strong possibility that we could export, we think, up to $18 million worth. Now, this is one-tenth of the production in the States. There's no reason why Alaska couldn't supply strawberry plants. This is not strawberries. This is just the plants. Go out and nurse them. Now, this is wild thinking, maybe, but I don't see any reason in the world why it can't be. It isn't technically feasible. Okay. Here's the ornamental plants. People say, why don't you grow Christmas trees? I don't know. We'd like to find out. We know that people are going to be using about this much worth. And then there are bedding plants. We already have a market for bedding plants, but the plants are brought in from the outside, and they usually are plants that are not adapted to Alaska. And lawns, cut flowers, and so on, perhaps by 1985 up to $12 million worth. Now, this is just for homes. Think of the parks. Think of the plants in Anchorage, plants around all the parking meters downtown. Think of the strips along the highways. Think of the University of Alaska campus, although we're not going to have to pay for those, I hope. Anyway, we think that at least as many would be planted publicly, making this potentially a very large industry. Let me stop for a minute and show those large slides. If you could turn that. I just want to give you an idea of what could be done with exporting cut flowers. I don't know why nobody thinks of this. This is an aster, of course. Asters in California develop a disease called aster yellow, which is very difficult to control. The virus is transmitted by insects that Alaska has, but in very low quantity because the climate won't let them get out of hand. We can raise them better here than they can there. I don't have to tell you that flowers grow beautifully in Alaska. If Hawaii can export flowers to the United States, why can't we? It's just as close. It's seasonal, but why can't we do it in the summer? Next, just run through these slides. Give them a minute, a few seconds to look at each one. I just want to remind you, you know all this already, but just as fast as you can put them in. Needs a little bit of focus, I think. Could you focus it just a little bit? You recognize that these things are bought in florist stop shops all the time. Of course, we have to do this in the summer, but people buy flowers in the summer, too. I think that's the same one. Now, is this the stocks, Ron?
No.
All right, okay. I am not a horticulturist. We're going to come to them.
Potential for possibly for export of sweet peas.
Sure. And as you know, sweet peas grow here like nowhere else in the world, along with every other kind of peas.
Stocks.
Now, stocks, apparently. Don, you tell them. Just about a second.
Well, stocks do better in this cool climate. We don't have some of the diseases that they have in the lower 48. Some of them are virus and some of them are root rot, and so there may be a potential for these flowers for export too. They're what we call a hard flower. They hold under shipment. They stand up.
Is this about?
I think we're about
here. Getting there. Yeah. Well, you've seen these things before. They just grow all over the place. All a person has to have is a patience to put them out. Of course, this just treated as an ordinary flower. That's all right. And grass. You stop here for just 1 second. The best grass, the most popular grass in the United States has been Marion bluegrass, but they're running into problems with it right now. Alaska has a grass developed up here called nugget bluegrass, which has been tested all over the northern United States, as far south anyway as Washington, and it's turning out to be by far the best grass they have ever seen. I don't know whether we're going to get a chance to grow the seed to sell to those people or not, but it would be a wonderful thing if we could. Okay, you want to, because Alaska has many, many wild grasses that could be used. These are potatoes. It's a better picture than the one I showed you. That has nothing to do with the flowers. Go ahead. Last slide. And we have a possibility for some more conventional type fruits. Apples, we don't really know what we could do with them. They're pretty big. Of course, you know what strawberries are like. Is that the end of that?
Yeah.
Okay. I guess we could use the lights. You want to put another new graph on there? Related to, there's no dollar value on this, but think of the employment for people that take care of these lawns and gardens and supply the demand for equipment, things like that. Okay. Next. Okay, let's turn that off for the moment. Can I have the lights, please? Now, there are other values, too, besides just money. money is not the most important thing in the world. I'm really sorry, projectionist, but I need the other slides. I didn't realize that. 35 millimeters. There are things that, besides money, gardens. Everybody has gardens. You can't put monetary value on that. Or this crabapple or that lilac bush back there. This garden, I can tell you personally, saved a considerable amount of money to my family, but we'd have done it anyway because we just liked it. In this case, man didn't have to have this to live, but he liked it. This is Holy Cross Mission. They can import things. Actually, I don't think it's going to save them very much money, but they're getting a great deal of pleasure out of it. This is the FAA personnel at Tanana. Everywhere you go in Alaska, people have gardens. Is that the last slide? No. Oh. Okay. All right. Wait a minute, Don. I guess we're not ready yet. All right. In order to meet this potential, to realize this potential, of course, we need lots of things, not just the experiment station. We've got to have farmers. We've got to have land available. This is a very serious thing now because some of the best land for agriculture in Alaska is being occupied by fairgrounds and gas stations and things of that sort. This is not a matter for the regents, but I think it's certainly a matter for the legislature to do something to protect the usable land. We need more financing, of course. We need maybe regulatory legislation. The freight rates in Alaska, for example, are far higher on farm products than they should be than they are in the other states. It might surprise you. I mean, in relation to other rates. But research is required, and that, of course, is our business, and that's the purpose of this thing. Could I have the next set of slides, please? Yeah, 35 millimeter slides. Okay, well, it's all right. It'll save time. But I had some examples of research, and I'll just have to give you one example, which I've got written down here. The 10 years ago, the average production, dairy cow production in the Matanuska Valley was about 6,000 to 7,000 pounds a milk. That was partly because they were using the wrong kind of cows, partly because the cows were suffering from deficiencies of things like cobalt, which they didn't know at the time, and partly perhaps they could have been fed better. At the present, the average production is about 10,000 pounds. The average in the experiment station is 13,000, and we have one cow that produced 21,000 pounds. Probably none of this would have happened if it hadn't been for the activities of the experiment station. It's not all research. Some of it's service. But we claim considerable amount of credit for that improvement. I could mention many other areas in which research is needed and in which we can reasonably expect to have improvements. You remember I showed you a picture of a cow just practically buried in grass. Within a couple of years, that grass is chewed right down to the ground and won't come back up because that wild grass is not the type that will continue to grow. We are experimenting down in that area on other types of grass which may be better adapted to continual grazing, and we know that we will have success eventually. Now, I want to give you the brief a brief history of the station. The United States Department of Agriculture started the station in 1898, and there was a farm at Sitka, Copper Center, Rampart, Kodiak, Palmer, and College. I don't know if there are any others or not. They didn't all function at once. There was very little money. The first year there was $5,000, but it gradually increased. You know, you're certainly familiar with the history of the University of Alaska, and I'd like to point out to you that the first group that agitated for the formation was the people at the experiment station. And it is certainly right that the experiment station should be part of the university. But in 1947, the station was taken away from the university. During the 40s, the Department of Agriculture became very unhappy. One example, 1943-44, the federal government appropriated $39,000 for research, and the station sold $28,000 worth of product. And the Department of Agriculture thought, probably with some justification, that it had paid for $28,000 worth of products which were sold by the station. Anyway, the research money, the money was supposed to be spent just for research, you see. So there was some misunderstandings there, and it was taken away. And 20 years later, in 1967, we got the station back again. At present, we have 7.5 University of Alaska professional employees. That half man is not a half-wit. He is one of the sharpest people we have, but he will not work more than 6 months a year. He homesteads in the summer. He works in the winter. Anyway, we also have an unfilled position, which we're recruiting for. There are 7 federal employees attached to the station, and they have an unfilled position, too. We have facilities here at college, in the Palmer and Matanuska area, and at Petersburg. Now, you will not find any reference to Petersburg in this report, not at the present anyhow. We have some special problems there. I would like to give you a special report on that sometime later. And if I have time later on, I'll explain a little further. But right now, I would like to leave that aside. The budget request this year was for $1.14 million, of which 1/3 would come from the federal government. This would represent an increase of about $200,000 over last year. And we ask for that for 2 reasons. One, for rehabilitation of what we inherited from the federal government. We got a bunch of buildings with leaking roofs. We got some rusted farm machinery. We got some broken down trucks. We got a lot of things of value, but it was withering on the vine. And the last time Secretary Freeman was up here, he was all for closing it down. But it was one of the states, just like the other states, and he just couldn't quite do it. But he said that he never thought it would amount to anything. Not the station, but Alaska. Now, this agriculture in Alaska. Now, you see, I don't want you to think everybody in Washington thinks that. We've got some wonderful friends in Washington. But the policy has been, like it is in so many other things in Alaska, colonial sort of thing. The other thing, and we want to replace some of this stuff, one-time only basis. The rest of the money is for a new start on red meat research. Now, we can't just hire a man to work on animals because we've got to have something to feed the animals. We want a range management man too. And we've got to find the cheapest way to produce and the best way to sell it. We need an economist. We need a team. We want a team approach. And we need some supplies for these people and a certain amount of equipment and some technicians to help them and so on. So we ask for a new start on the red meat. I would like to take just 1 second to read something from the Stanford Research Institute report. Beef production in the Southwest should prove to be low cost and competitive with any other beef producing area in the world, provided operations are of sufficient scope to achieve economies of scale. And it goes on to point out there's some problems, and we know there are problems, but we think it's time to do something with this. Now, the funding, I would like, Vice President Ray told you yesterday that the experiment station was using more state funds than any other part in the university, or it's close to it anyway. I should explain to you that the experiment station chiefly does applied research. And applied research is usually paid for by the people that benefit from it. The people that benefit from agricultural research are the people of the state. And all over the United States, experiment stations are supported mostly by the state funds. We do have some basic research in the station, and we're trying to get outside support for that. But we can't expect some foundation to support the improvement of our potato crop, unless, of course, we're starving, as we would be perhaps in some other country. So there's a reason for that, and I think it's just inescapable. John, can I have a new graph? You can't read these things. We don't expect you to read these things. But this is a list of professional employees at Rhode Island, the experiment station. The smallest state, been farming for 300 years already. It must not have too many problems that they haven't been able to foresee. This is what the largest state in the country with probably the most problems has. And approximately half of them are university employees, and the other half are just loaned by the federal government. Next. This is our present distribution of people. This man hasn't been hired yet, but it's authorized, and as soon as we can get one, we'll get it. But these are the possible disciplines that should be represented. And you'll notice that most of them are blank, and it adds up to really very little. Now, I'm going to show you our plans for expansion, and of course we're thinking of several years. We're not thinking of this all at once, but this is what we think we would need eventually in these various areas for red meat production. You see the term SMYs. This means scientific managers. You can't just hire a man. He can't do anything. He's got to have a loan. He's got to have a place to work. He has to have equipment to work with. He has to have some seasonal labor to go out and help him harvest things and count things and weigh things at the right time. He's got to have supplies. He's got to have a secretary or part of one anyway, and other things. All over the United States, they speak of agricultural workers in terms of scientific man years. And in the United States, this means about $50,000. Up here, it means maybe $60,000, maybe a little bit more. As I say, this is not salary. This is, each one of these represents maybe several people. Some represent less than others. You'll notice maybe it might be surprised to see rural sociology here. The thing is, how are you going to keep them down on the farm? This is a problem all over the United States. And Mrs. Bullock, I guess I know you better than any of the other regions. It's hard to be using your name again, but this is, as you know, is one of our problems with reindeer. The problem that we just can't get anybody to go out and herd these things. So you might be surprised some of the people, kinds of people we're asking for. Okay. This is what we think we need for milk. There's the other half of that veterinarian that we were using on the beef. Okay. Vegetables. Okay. These, I thought you might like to see what sort of things these vegetable people would do. They're going to have to run variety tests on at least 40 kinds of vegetables. They're going to have to test for climatic adaptation, market quality, disease control. We've just had some pesticides outlawed, which were quite important to us, particularly the weed types. And this is all over the country, too, of course. We've got to get disease-resistant things. Cultural techniques, I won't run over the whole list. There are many, many things that need to be done here. We have to work on quality and decide what we're going to be satisfied with for the quality. Find out what the consumer wants. Does the consumer want carrots that are long and narrow? Does it want short, fat ones? What will she take? Extending the market season. This is possible. There are a number of different things, particularly if you go into greenhouses. There are a number of things that you can do to extend the season. For small fruits, we are doing nothing on this now. On most of these things, we're doing nothing because we just don't have anybody. But that's what we think we need. Ornamentals. Now, this summarizes all of those people. And you will notice this brings in a new concept. We are hoping to have three main centers here, Matanuska Valley and the Kenai. This does not mean that we're not serving other parts of Alaska, but we think we need at least three places where this work is going on. If you add these up, you'll find we're somewhere around 60, approximately 60 of these. And we need a few others that are not listed here, but it should come to around 70 people and perhaps $4 million. Considering the figures on production that we showed you, possible production, we don't think that that's a terribly high percentage to spend on research. This is how these people would be organized. You notice we snuck in a different title, too. I'll tell you something about that later on. But these people would be arranged simply in four departments. Yes. And the research program, however, as I told you, would be multidisciplinary. Are we getting them all in there? Well, let's see what's on the top. Okay, move that up. That's fine. This is what I've been talking about. This is the applied research part. This is undoubtedly the biggest part. But as you know, we've got to have basic research to back it up. I don't think I have to explain that any further here. This is research, but it is not experimental. This is a matter of looking at the environment and deciding what needs to have the next one just momentarily. We'll come back to that. For instance, this is copied out of the beautiful atlas, environmental atlas that was just produced here. These are the areas marked down as potential farming areas in Alaska. These are based on soil surveys, but that's not enough. In the first place, the soil surveys aren't complete yet. In the second place, you have to know where do you get an early frost? Where do you get rain? It's in many places, right in the Matanuska Valley, one farmer will have a killing frost every year, a week or 2 weeks before his neighbor does. Certain parts there get much more rain than other parts. There are many things to be looked into besides just soils. That's what this environmental survey and evaluation means. I want to go back to that other map. The resource protection and development may surprise you, but remember, soil and water conservation are in the Department of Agriculture in Washington. So is forestry. Many other things that are not row crop, dairy barn things. Vegetation, I would like to point out that agriculture departments in the state, other states, take care of developing things to plant on roadsides. They're red cuts from washing. The taps. People had one of our people up on the North Slope this last year doing a study of the vegetation that's growing along the pipeline route because, as you know, they've got to do something to revegetate it. You can't just pour out a little red top or a little lawn seed that you get from the hardware store. You've got to do something special. We don't quite know what, but the point is that we have the capabilities right now. We have a beginning, and we should have much more to study this sort of thing. People don't ordinarily think of that as agriculture, but it is. We have been approached several times by the road people as to what they should plant on highways in various places. Air pollution, of course, has wiped out agriculture in some places in the states where high sulfur content, oil and coal has been burned and vegetation is just, crop yields have been cut way down. Energy might take a little explanation. We have, of course, more hours of sunlight in Alaska than the other 48 states do, the lower 48. But it is true that it's at a very low angle. Now, some of our people are experimenting with a new machine they built, which will put the soil on an angle in beds, on an angle facing the sun, so that it will get more energy. We've done considerable work with covering the ground with plastic. I wish I had those slides there. You know, we can't grow field corn in Alaska.
They have them. I think you had them.
Did you have those slides? All right, can I see some of them? I'm not sure they were in there somewhere. We've run past this thing. Would you focus it up a little bit? This is the cow that's the wrong kind and is suffering from a cobalt deficiency. This is a cow which is the right, it was the wrong type, but is a healthy cow. And those are the kind that they should have. Can I have the next one, please?
You've got
it. Did I turn something off? Something's jammed up, I guess. Okay. There's a herd of the right kind. This cow has a window in it. We're studying what happens to the digestive processes. Incidentally, we have a committee of people from the lower 48 coming up here to look at this with us. I mean, this is not anything unique, this technique, but I would like to point out that we're just as good as anybody else in the States is on this. I mean, we are, the kind of research that is being performed on ruminant digestion is just as good as what is going on in Iowa and Illinois. There's a thing. This cow's perfectly happy. Another example of research is the fact that it's now possible for us to raise calves without using any cow's milk at all, which of course conserves the milk. Here's what I started out to tell you. This corn is raised under plastic. That is just a sheet of plastic over the ground. I think these ears have sold for something like 25 cents a piece, haven't they? Down in Power, and they're in tremendous demand. Anybody can do it that wants to with this technique. Well, that's an example of using energy in a more efficient way, solar energy. These are to show what happens to this grass on the Kenai. That's the first year. That's the second year. This is a 6-inch stake. And that's after a few more years. It's down to here. So we went to the Jack Epperson Ranch down there, and with his cooperation, we ought to have a station of our own, but with his cooperation, we prepared some land, laid out some plots, planted various varieties and types of forage to test. And here's an example, a monstrous example of what happens when you fail to use the results of research. There's nothing wrong with here that you could see. This is a large greenhouse. It's the largest greenhouse in Alaska, which is now bankrupt after completely refusing to take any kind of advice, asking for it, but refusing to follow it for the last number of years. There's no reason in the world why it shouldn't be making money. There's about an acre under glass here. This was land capability. There are vast areas here which probably are suitable for farming. You've flown over this kind of country plenty of times. In spots there are farms, and more than likely the whole area is, but we don't know for sure until we do studies. Even there are some small valleys, very small valleys, which contain places where farming is probably possible. One of the ways in which we measure environment is by watching the behavior of certain plants. For instance, these plants, if these plants occur in a certain area, it's an indication that certain crops might do well there. If they occur the first week in June, it's an indication that you've had so many degree days of heating up to that time, and not heating, I didn't mean to use it that way, but so many degree days, and that other things could be planted. If over in a neighboring field they don't bloom until maybe 2 weeks later, you know the season is behind there. This is a science of phenology. It's used all over the States. It's been used since the Revolutionary War before. You remember the old expression, you plant your corn when the leaves on the oaks are the size of squirrels' ears? I hope that's right. That's a rough idea. Anyway, that's an exact science, and we're looking into that too. This is one of the camps that Dr. Mitchell stayed in on the pipeline route last summer. And we have just been asked whether we can carry out studies of the toxicity of oil on tundra plants in our greenhouse during the winter. And the answer is yes, we can. And we're going to give Dr. Ray the answer to pass on to the people. Okay, I think that's all for now. All right, Don?
Yeah, I'm through with that
one. Now, these are first staffing priorities. In the red meat, we ask for this. This is really agronomy. Soils, that's the nature of agronomy, the way it's going to go. And economics and animal husbandry. We just ask for part of it. We would really like to ask for more people in all areas. Yes? This would be the second staffing priorities. I'd like to point out to you that we're thinking of approximately equal sizes in all of these centers. Now, capital improvements, I'm going through these very fast, but the first, I have to pause here for a minute. The first phase that we wanted in this next bond issue came to about $2.5 million. For some reason, the figure that went by you people was about half that. We know perfectly well that you regents have approved everything we have ever asked of you. We know that the fact that we didn't get all of it is not your fault. I feel I have to say something to you now on this subject. I know that you received two letters, and I have another letter I've been asked to give you, saying, gentlemen, please reconsider. Give the experiment station what it needs. I want you to, I don't know whether you all have seen those or not, I want you to understand we're not mounting any kind of pressure campaign at all. There is a lot of interest in the state in agriculture. There really is a lot of interest on the Kenai, the Matanuska Valley, and up here. There's interest by some of the legislators, and there's going to be a move, I think, maybe to increase the amount of money that we get. But it is a misunderstanding to think that we think that you're responsible for our not getting it. We do hope we would welcome support in the legislature from these people to increase the amount. But I don't want you to think that we are trying to get people to write to you and say that you treated us wrong. That's all. Okay. In phase two, Tano Valley, Manuska Valley, about the same sort of thing. There's no sense in taking the time to read all these things, but we'll put them down anyway. How do we get into, we must have misplaced something. Well, when we get to phase three, we just have it in the wrong order. When we get to phase three, that's all right, Don. It's perfectly all right. We've just got it out in square feet. We don't have it down in money, because as a matter of fact, that's so far off, probably the prices will all be changed. Now, is that the end of those?
That's the last one.
Okay. I just want you to know we have figured out what we think we need. Okay. Is that the last thing? Fine. We think we know what we need, all right. But we know that this plan is very imperfect. We've already made changes in it, but there comes a time when you've got to print it up and give it to people. You can't just keep changing it forever. The facilities that we think we need would come to about $12 million for the amount at today's prices, for the amount of the size of the industry that we project. We don't think that's too much. We started out originally with a date. I'm not going to tell you what it is. We'd like to get it as fast as possible. But what about this plan? I mean, is it just our say-so or what? What's the evaluation of this plan we have so far? It was produced in the first place with the help of every person we've got. It is not a consensus. We've had some violent arguments. I mean, it is a consensus, but we've had some violent arguments about it, and you can find plenty of people, including some in this room, that will disagree with what we've asked for. But on the whole, this is what we, about the best agreement you can expect to get. Now, we have an advisory committee. We have Mr. Rissey, who's a greenhouse operator here in Fairbanks, is a chairman. Don McKee, who's the biggest pork producer so far in Tano Valley. We have Harlan Hamilton, who is a very successful upcoming dairy farmer in the Matanuska Valley. We have Max Sherrod, who is the king of vegetables in the Matanuska Valley. We have Mrs. Atwood from Anchorage. We have Larry Farnan from Homer, who's a chairman of the, well, as far as we're concerned, he is an agricultural leader in the business community down there. He actually works for Homer Electric. And we have Dr. Krause, who for 42 years was associate director, or at least ended up as associate director of the Ohio State Agricultural Experiment Station. These people met last summer. We didn't have the plan bound up in blue at the time, but we showed them what we had, and they approved of what we're doing. The Stanford research people wrote up a series of working papers. I don't know what the distribution of those is. I know that the report is much abbreviated, but they sent Dr. James Bray, the principal economist, up to Alaska to look over the situation. And he wrote a working paper, which I'd just like to give you the conclusions. The agricultural potential in the state of Alaska is considerable, and it would be wrong to judge the likely future magnitude of development on the basis of past accomplishments. The degree to which development potential is realized will depend largely on the degree to which a conscious policy based on economic and social evaluation of the benefits that would flow from development will lead to the intellectual and financial commitment of the required effort and resources. The obstacles are great enough that economic forces alone are likely to support only slow growth. The natural conditions in Alaska are distinct from those in the temperate zones, and special techniques are required for success. Too little is currently known about these techniques, and basic and applied agricultural research will be required to produce the information. The marketing problems in Alaska are peculiar, pose additional difficulties on the agriculture industry. The size of the industry will clearly be fixed at a reasonably small scale unless products are found and marketing techniques are developed for selling to world markets. It is clear that the fundamental U.S. agriculture price support policies have very little application to Alaskan agriculture, and this means that the state will have to supply a policy for Alaskan agriculture if one is to exist. New agricultural information only becomes available through applied research, and this implies a necessity for agricultural extension work. The possibility of using agricultural development as an activity that would contribute to the integration of the native population implies that adult or continuing educational schemes are complementary to extension effort. Agriculture in Alaska probably offers a greater opportunity for social than economic returns to development capital and efforts. If it cannot be demonstrated that agriculture development is a necessary condition for general economic progress in Alaska, there accordingly is no economic development case for large subsidies or special treatment. However, there is no reason to believe that the economically optimal rate of agricultural progress is socially optimal. Agriculture appears to offer one of the main opportunities by which Alaska's dual economy can be integrated. The combination of possible social returns and economic benefits appears to be great enough to compete favorably with other opportunities for social investment. And there's other stuff in here, too. Nobody has ever talked about Alaska like that before. We think Dr. Bray is a gentleman and a scholar, and we love him. Now, what we would like, we've shown the phasing, haven't we? We skipped that, all right. What we would like right now is approval of this plan in general. We don't want to be tied down to what we say now we think we want, because later on it might be different. But in general, we would like your approval of what we're trying to do. If possible, we would like to have a statement from you that if somebody wants to give us more money, you wouldn't object. Senator Palmer tells me he's ready to introduce a bill to do something about this, but he says it would help if he had, if he knew the regents didn't mind. He asked me if, and he may have written a letter to Mr. O'Neill asking that you have some sort of statement. We would like to change the name from experiment station to institute. I understand that this is not much of a change in status, this is a change in name. All over the United States, experiment stations are changing their name because, well, right now, Dr. Dinkle is trying to get a grant from NASA to study the effects of centrifugal force on nitrogen utilization in plants. Now, what he's actually going to do is centrifuge potatoes. This is basic research, but in those terms, you're not going to get it from NASA. You're going to get it in terms of the basic information. Experiment station to many people means a dairy barn and some plots and stuff like that. It doesn't mean basic research. In the station here, we are not a bunch of farmers. Not that there's anything whatever wrong with farmers, but we're animal and plant scientists, economists, engineering specialists, and we have a knowledge and capabilities to go beyond farming and do other things too. And we think that another name would be more suitable. We could provide a home for a number of the bits and pieces of the university here, which haven't quite fallen into their proper slots yet, I think. I think we could do a lot more than we've ever been asked to do. And in the future, we hope you'll remember us and ask us to do more. That's
all right, thank you very much. Very much today. I wish we could get yourself something with a full press. Again, I'm sadly behind the time, and so I think we'll postpone any questions or discussion of Dr. Drury's presentation until after lunch, and then we now hear from Dr. Van Cleve, who will speak about the forestry program.
Forestry Soils Lab was established at the University of Alaska in 1965 through a Hill Foundation grant. Since this time, the major source of financial support has been through the McIntyre-Stennis Cooperative State Forest Research Act funds. Through a cooperative arrangement with the U.S. Forest Service, the laboratory is located in the Forestry Sciences Building, a federally owned installation, which is part of the Institute of Northern Forestry of the Pacific Northwest Forest and Range Experiment Station. From the time of establishment, two professional foresters have been in charge of the laboratory. Dr. Paul Heilman assisted in establishing the laboratory in 1965 and left the university in 1967. I arrived on the scene in 1967. At the present time, the laboratory employs three full-time technicians, a chemist, a microbiologist, and a general laboratory technician. In addition, one graduate student is employed half-time while working on a program in forest soils for a Master of Science degree. The principal objective of the operation of the Forestry Soils Laboratory is to obtain and disseminate information relating to soils problems and their solutions in the major forest types of Alaska through research and teaching. However, the scope of problems associated with natural resource management in Alaska has resulted in the laboratory becoming associated with questions dealing with soil plant relations in most of the major soil vegetation zones in the state. Research emphasis during the first 2 years of laboratory operation dealt primarily with tree nutrition problems as related to the soil. Two professional articles were published dealing with black spruce nutrition on north slopes in interior Alaska. One master's degree in forest soils was granted on a problem dealing with the chemistry of podzol soils in southeastern Alaska. Cooperative research was conducted by the laboratory on soil plant relations problems in cooperation with the Forest Service in southeastern Alaska. Present research orientation of the laboratory, while being the same as in the past, recognizes that a type of activity organization is needed, which considers all parts of the forest environment, including man. The popular name for this concept in natural resource management today is the ecosystem approach. With the ever-increasing need for an understanding of the interrelationships between all parts of our environment, and particularly for the wise management of all natural resources, this concept is invaluable. With the ecosystem concept as a framework for organization of the research activities, the Forest Soils Laboratory is presently conducting experiments in birch, aspen, white spruce, and black spruce forests, which are designed to measure biotic and abiotic or physical factors, which are important in the development of these forest types. Unfortunately, maybe not all of you have the handout I gave, but the illustrations that follow will give you some idea of some of the activities in which the laboratory is presently engaged. Figure one depicts a typical experimental plot setup, which happens to be in a 120-year-old aspen stand. The instrumentation there is designed to measure various physical environmental parameters. Point A depicts the above-ground portion of a soil temperature pile, which is designed to measure temperatures within the rooting zone of the forest vegetation. B is a typical weather shelter, which houses instruments which are used to measure atmospheric temperature and humidity. C is a standard rain gauge. All of the experimental sites are instrumented with this type of apparatus. Figure 2 illustrates the equipment used to measure another physical environmental parameter, soil moisture. With a low mean annual precipitation, which is encountered in interior Alaska, approximately 12 inches, soil moisture may be limiting to tree growth during abnormally dry summers, such as the summer of 1969. The instrument illustrated in Figure 2, a neutron probe, allows a long-term measurement with relatively little disturbance to the surrounding ground of soil moisture. In the figure, point B is actually the neutron probe shield situated on an access tube, and you can barely see the connecting cord to the power supply A, at which an index of soil moisture is read out. Estimates of soil moisture storage obtained with this method may eventually be used not only in following tree growth, but in fire danger index ratings, and also in general estimates of water runoff. To back up a little bit to figure 1D, D is one of several litter screens, which are placed on each experimental plot to measure the amount of organic matter that is deposited on the forest floor. This litter fall is one of the principal means by which nutrients are returned to the soil. And the study of the rate at which the organic matter decays will provide an index of how fast nutrients become available for reutilization by the trees. Figure 3 is an example of a diameter band which enables a forester to follow the expansion and contraction of a tree. A is actually the scale which is used for the measurement. But the diameter band enables a forester to study the week-to-week response of growth to changes in any of the environmental parameters, precipitation, temperature, soil moisture. The technique can also be used to study the influence of intensive management techniques such as fertilization and forest thinning. The response of birch and aspen and white spruce forests to some of these intensive management techniques is presently being studied. Figure 4 illustrates the response of a 10-year-old aspen stand to fertilization with nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. This was a pilot experiment begun in 1967, and the results show for the seasons 1968 and 69 approximately a 2.6 and 5.1-fold increase in diameter growth of the aspen through the addition of fertilizers. The height growth at the end of the 1969 season was 10-fold greater on the fertilized plots. This is a rather significant effect. A strong laboratory experimental program is also being maintained to support the field research. Physical and chemical laboratory analysis is used to characterize soil vegetation complexes in which field work is being conducted. Laboratory experimentation is used to confirm field measurements of biological processes and to carry out measurements of processes which are more readily measured by laboratory apparatus.